Bernie Sanders keeps talking about the need for a revolution. Some would argue that revolution already took place. It was called the 2016 presidential election. Maybe the resistance shown by Bernie, the Democrats, even to this day some Republicans, demonstrates the disconnect that exists within those groups regarding the American people. My next guest presents a view of all this from her time as part of the Trump administration, along with her observations and analysis of all those who are against the president's goals and accomplishments. She also helps you understand what it's like when those opponents have the ending of a story that they basically demand that you be part of the middle of. It's all in her book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She served in the Trump campaign and administration as Deputy National Security Advisor, KT McFarland. How are you today, Ms. McFarland?
It's great to be with you, Chris.
Well, it's great to have your book here because we often are poisoned by the outsiders looking in, and to hear the facts from an insider, I think, is of great value. KT's on Twitter at KT McFarland. You can
No, it's at Real KT McFarland.
By standard in this case, it corrected. What was it that you wanted to tell with your book? Because when it comes to talking about any experience in the world of Donald Trump, there's a lot to be told. But what was your main mission?
I have three missions. The first was to describe why I, as a traditional Republican elitist foreign policy expert, decided to leave that group and to join Donald Trump because I thought he had the right policies and was going to take the country in a very different direction, which I endorsed. So the second part of the book is then what happened. Well, he was elected. I joined his administration, how we took his campaign promises and put them into reality. And the trouble I ran into when I left the Trump administration and was pursued and hounded by the Mueller investigation, even though I had had no contact with any Russians, hadn't been part of the campaign, wasn't really in their radar screen. They came after me, trying to trap me in what was called a perjury trap, so that I would either plead guilty to crimes I didn't commit or would implicate Trump and others in crimes that I didn't think they had committed. And my choice was either to do that or to prove myself innocent and face bankruptcy over years of legal fees. But then the final part, which is the good news of all this, is that when I was finished with Washington, I left the country trying to make sense, and I went to the most remote part of Scotland where there was no Wi-Fi, cell phone, TV, nothing. And my husband and I took long walks in the rain, and I tried to make sense of what was going on in America. Was this just Washington hated Trump, or was there something else? And I was collateral damage. Well, I think it's bigger than Washington hates Trump, although they do hate Trump. And that's because the people in Washington, the permanent bureaucracy, the people you can't fire, the people who set the rules and regulations, they decided they didn't like Trump, but they particularly didn't like the fact that the American people were trying to elect somebody who wasn't on their approved list of candidates. So they fight back, and that's what they're doing now. I think that what we're in the middle of is a real political revolution. It's the people that elected Trump, who will probably re-elect Trump, and the people in Washington who have come to see it as their divine right to govern the rest of us, regardless of what we want.
The platform that Trumpism, I guess we'll call it for the sake of brevity, mm-hmm. that it exists on, it's referred to as the populist movement. But it's a political term, obviously, and been around for as long as the political process has been. I'm thinking back, you can maybe go back to the 1980s, Pat Buchanan, in the media, Morton Downey Jr. You might have saw the infancy of the expansion of the populist movement. What was it about what Donald Trump was saying and doing that really helped that movement finally explode to the level it did?
The movement was around, as you point out, before Trump came along. And I think, having gotten to know Trump pretty well, the reason he ran for president was not to lead a populist revolution, but it was to fix government. But he's a business guy. And what he saw over the years were a lot of candidates running for president coming to ask him for money. And I think he concluded, nothing to it. They're not so great. And the fact that the United States was really headed to permanent decline. So I think he looked at America as a CEO would look at a sick company with a lot of potential. I can run this. I can run it better than those guys. So why not give it a whirl? And yet once he got on the campaign trail and started having rallies in different cities, he saw something very different. And I've talked to other people on the plane with him, his family members. They said they would go to these rallies. There would be no announcement in advance. There would be no effort to get people to them. Just Trump was going to show up at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. And people lined up for hours in the rain, in cold weather, sometimes even lined up overnight. And 20, 30,000 people showed up because they wanted to hear somebody who was going to give them a voice. And so all of a sudden, it became a very different campaign for Trump. He understood that there were real faces and lives and stories behind the statistics. And that's, I think, when it became a real mission for him, a real personal crusade to represent the people that the Washington establishment had shoved to the side and whose values had been trampled and whose interests had been exploited and whose lives were really disposable, according to the elite people who were in Washington. And Trump represented those people, and I think he continues to do so with enormous effectiveness.
So KT McFarland, her new book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. On Twitter, it's at Real KT McFarland, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. The Trump public style, which my theory has always been, you know, people wondering, how is he so comfortable in front of five figures worth of people, tens of thousands? And I always say, well, he did a couple of storylines back in the day with pro wrestling in front of huge arenas. So I think, at least I think, that's where he built his comfort zone out. So when he came out in the campaign with crowd sizes like that, it just seemed natural to him by that point. But the Trump style of speaking always seems like he's the political version of Robin Williams, just a master of improvisation. Even with the teleprompter inside, you know he's going to stray off of it, but then seam back into it effortlessly. Policy-wise, is that level of improvisation in developing policy and discussing it and creating it, was that part of the picture too?
You know, that's a really good question, because Trump's critics have said, oh, he's just fly by night. He's just winging it. It's all off the top of his head. He'll change American foreign policy just on a whim. That's not what I experienced. It may look like it's unpredictable and a whim, but Trump has thought it through in advance. He's talked to an awful lot of people, not just the people from the State Department, but his very wide circle of acquaintances and business people that he's known over decades. He's mulled it over. He's made a decision, but then he puts that decision up his sleeve or in his pocket, and he'll pull it out when he thinks it's the best time to do it. I also found that he'll have a goal, like we want to renegotiate a trade agreement with the Chinese that's more favorable to us, less to our disadvantage. And that's the goal, but he's not quite sure how to get there. So he's going to try different things. He's going to try a trade war. He's going to try increasing the American military. He's going to try the charm offensive. One way or another, he's going to get to that goal. He's just not sure what route he's going to take along the way until he tries it.
Mentioning China, do you think his coming out and speaking out about the reality of what China had been doing, what America had been allowing China to do to us as a nation economically, do you think that won him support from places he might not have won support from?
Yes, absolutely. I think that he looked at the big picture. Again, he's a businessman, and he looked at China, and China has been taking advantage of the United States because we let them for decades. I mean, our theory with China 20 years ago was, well, we'll help them develop, often at the expense of our own industries, particularly manufacturing industries in the Midwest. We'll let China develop. It'll create a middle class. It'll open up its society. It'll open up its economy. And it will be a strong ally and trading partner with the United States. That's not what happened. The Chinese did not open up their society. They clamped down even harder. The Chinese have not gone along with a more level playing field of investment and trade and tariffs. Just the opposite. They've taken advantage of American preoccupation with the Middle East and America's initial generosity, and they have used it, I think, to try to become the most powerful nation in the world, not only to push the United States out of the Pacific, but to be the new superpower in the 21st century, the country that writes the rules like America did in the 20th century.
Only because you sort of bridge the, I'm not trying to say, you know, age you or anything, but just from experience, you bridge the errors from the Kissinger Reagan side of things to the here and now. Just from what you know of the individuals as they are and as they were, would Ronald Reagan give a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a not sure yet for President Trump?
Yeah, I've written about this in my book, and I think that Trump is actually Donald Trump's true heir. Now, every Republican since Reagan has said, oh, I'm the new Reagan Republican. I'm Reagan's heir. But in fact, they weren't. Trump is in the following way, not in personality, not in temperament, not in the way he behaves on the national stage or international stage, but from a policy perspective. Trump understood the first thing you've got to do is get leverage. And that, how do you do that? You fix the American economy. You need to get out of the Middle East, but you need oil. How do you fix that? You create an American energy industry, which makes us energy independent. How do you renegotiate security agreements with our allies? You talk to them and threaten them. How do you renegotiate trade agreements with our competitors? You play tough. I mean, Reagan had many of the same problems that Trump had. But in fact, Trump's problems are bigger because I think government has become bigger and more oppressive than it was in Reagan's day. But Trump has an additional advantage, which is by getting America energy independent, not only is it a stimulus to our economy, but it also allows us to get out of the Middle East. We don't need their oil. We don't need to be in the middle of their tribal ethnic warfare that's gone on for thousands of years.
For you listening, if you're wondering why Trump is winning, or maybe even more importantly, why we the people are winning, KT answers that with her book, Revolution, Trump Washington. And we the people follow her on Twitter at RealKTMcFarland. Ms. McFarland, it is a true education and I think a justification of what we've seen in the White House in this administration. And for what you reveal and what you teach through your writing and through your speaking, it's of total great value for we the people. And we thank you for that, for being here today.
I'm very flattered and humbled by what you've said. So not only is it a privilege, but it's a great opportunity. Thank you so much, Chris.